I know I've got no one to blame but myself, but I am so tired.
Why are you tired, sir? And keep your minds out of the gutter, everyone.
Well, you know, went out, did some Pokemon Going on the weekend on Sunday afternoon, and then was playing a game last night and just got the sense that I was getting near the end of this game and kept playing to the end of the game, not realising that it took me past midnight.
Oh, listeners, listen to it go on now. Aww. Look here, I'll hold this up and say, is it 1 o'clock yet?
If I had a drink, it'd probably put me to sleep.
No, we don't want that. We've got a What the History to do, Trev.
We do. We do.
Let's pep up. Pep. Let's get some pep. Snaps for Trev. Snaps for Trev. Stop looking at me like that.
Maybe we should get on with the show.
I'm just trying to pep him up, everyone.
I'm pretty pepped up. I'm looking forward to this one. It's a
pep.
It's a bit of a...
Is it peppy?
I think it's peppier than last time. Anyway, we shall get to that very, very soon.
Alrighty then.
What the... Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history to make you say, What the History?
And give me some more.
If Lisa, you wish.
I want some more What the History.
It's going to be one of those nights, I can tell. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by the very awesome...
And always giggling... Susie Holland.
And we do realise that last episode was a bit on the darker side, so we tried to be a bit more fun this time around. Whether we succeeded, well, let's just find out.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we actually failed or won on that one, but anyway.
It's not as dark as last week.
No, it's not as dark as last week.
There we go.
So, without further ado, I'm going to go first again. Yes. One of these days, Trev can go first. I really don't mind. He just usually just puts my story up first. And off I go. But anyway, firstly, a few jokes. After the somberness of our last episode, I warn you, they could be classified as dad jokes. But I gotta start somewhere. Okay, what do you call a man with a shovel on his head? Give up? Doug! Yay! What do you call a woman with a pint of beer on her head? Beatrix! I love that one so much!
I actually hadn't heard that one before this, so...
What do you call a man who had 1.1 metre long, 3.18 centimetres in diameter iron rod blasted into his head, the force blasting it out the top, and the rod landing up to 73 metres away, and he lived? You call him Phineas Gage, who survived this intrusion into his head and went on to live a fascinating life, becoming a walking and talking subject for neurological and psychological science. Phineas Gage was born in July 1823 in New Hampshire, USA, and at the age of 25 was working as a foreman of a railway construction crew just outside Cavendish in Vermont. On the 13th of September 1848, Phineas was using an iron tamping rod to pack explosive powder into a small hole on the Rutland and Burlington train line. Explosives were being used to remove rock to allow for the track to be built. He was distracted by speaking to his gang and the tamping rod hit the rock, igniting the powder, and the force sent the rod through Phineas's head, out the top, landing metres, now accounts vary from 10 metres to 73 metres away from Phineas, and sent him into the history books. The rod weighed approximately 6 kilo and tapered to a spike at one end and entered his skull from the left side, passing under his left cheek, behind his left eye, and exited through the top of his head. His co-workers ran to his side while others leaving to find the rod. They found it with blood and brain matter attached. It's unknown if Phineas did or did not lose consciousness, but the injury badly damaged the left lobe of his brain. This is the area that controls speech, language, and facial movements. Dr. John Harlow, assisted by Dr. Edward Williams, arrived on the scene some 2 hours later and made the following assessment, and I quote, "The tamping iron entered the cranium, passing through the anterior left lobe of the cerebrum, and made its exit in the medial line, at the junction of the coronal and sagittal sutures, lacerating the longitudinal sinus, fracturing the parietal and frontal bones extensively, breaking up a considerable portions of the brain, and protruding the globe of the left eye from its socket by nearly half its diameter." End quote.
Ooh.
Pretty nasty stuff. Another version of events state that Phineas sat up and was walking and talking and was helped to an ox cart to be attended by Dr. Williams at his house, approximately 1.2 kilometres away, quite cheekily saying to Dr. Williams after he arrived at his carriage, and I quote, "Doctor, here is business enough for you," end quote. And Dr. Williams later wrote, and again I quote, "I first noticed the wound upon the head before I alighted from my carriage, the pulsations of the brain being very distinct," end quote. Dr. Williams, or Dr. Harlow, depending on the report you read, examined the wounds, while Phineas was telling the people around him how the injury was caused and didn't believe his story, thinking that Phineas was flat out lying. Nevertheless, Phineas stuck to his story, told the doctor again that indeed a rod went through his head before Phineas got up, vomited, and the pressure on his head from vomiting released half a cup of his brain to the floor. Doctor cleaned and dressed the wounds as best he could, and the wait to see what the injury would do short term to Phineas began. Whichever version is the truth, both state that Dr. Harlow then took over the case. Phineas remained conscious into the night and was able to tell Dr. Harlow the names of his co-workers and was wanting to go back to work after a few days. Optimistic little Phineas. However, a few days later, one of the wounds became badly infected and Phineas was semi-comatose. His family prepared for the worst and a coffin. By this October 7th, Phineas had recovered and was taking his first steps out of bed, and by October 11th, his intellectual ability began to return, and he was well enough to travel to his parents' house to recuperate. The popular story goes that Phineas, his mind so altered by the accident, began to behave in a contrary way he was before the accident. Reports have him friendly, affable, and very capable with much business acumen prior, and afterwards he became profane, sullen, obstinate, impatient and rude to everyone, with his friends saying, and I quote, "no longer gauge," end quote. This was noted allegedly by Dr. Harlow, and Phineas no longer was able to work for the railroad company. There are some reports which say that no one knew what Phineas was like before the accident, as there wasn't any notes about his personality. So how can his personality before and after the accident be compared? But let's look at the facts. He held down a job, he was a foreman and therefore in a trusted position, and no one allegedly had any trouble from him. And these reports say his alleged altered personality only lasted a few months. Newspapers reported on the accident and Phineas's convalescence with varying degrees of accuracy. 3.5 months later, Phineas was leading a somewhat normal life, working at a livery stable in New Hampshire. Some reports say that he was displaying himself as an oddity at P.T. Barnum's museum in New York and working as a carriage driver in Chile for 7 years, which he would not have been able to do if his personality was still compromised, before returning home to the USA in 1859. All the time, the iron tampering rod was with him, even being photographed with the offending spike, a constant reminder of how close Phineas came to the grave. Phineas arrived in the USA as his health had begun to fail, and he moved to California, worked on a farm, and then on to San Francisco to be with his family. In 1860, he had begun to have epileptic seizures, passing away from one of them on the 21st of May, 1860. Strangely enough, a post-mortem was never done. In 1867, the body was exhumed apparently at the behest of Dr. Harlow, who had renewed the acquaintance with the family. The head removed and delivered with the tampering iron to Dr. Harlow, where it was donated to the Warren Museum at Harvard University School of Medicine, Boston, Massachusetts. And there it stays. I invite you all to do your own research into this story, as there are conflicting reports, but one fact remains true. Phineas Gage did live for almost 12 years after his head met with the iron rod, a medical marvel. Welcome, Phineas Gage, to the pages of What the History.
That story always astounds me.
It's amazing, isn't it? Oh my goodness.
To even be remotely functional after that sort of accident is incredible.
Amazing. Still walking and talking, holding down jobs, travelling across the seas. Apparently he was seasick the whole time. You know, just being Phineas, you know, just getting up and doing stuff. And it's pretty damn amazing.
Yeah, it's...
And walking and talking, and obviously, you know, we covered that bit, but...
Yeah, yeah. It can be pretty amazing when things that don't seem to match meet. Can be.
It can be very amazing.
Yes, indeed.
Beautiful segue, Trev.
Oh, that was not that a beautiful. Was that was not a beautiful segue. It was all I had to work with, though.
Oh, come on. I gave you plenty of fodder.
There was no iron bars involved in
iron bars. Oh, poor Phineas. So,
anyway.
Poor Phineas.
Indeed.
And I would also like to say that Phineas, of course, was blind in his left eye.
Yeah.
And it was actually sewn shut.
Yeah.
Sewn shut, people.
The enhanced version of this podcast should have
a picture
or two of Phineas in there.
Yeah, there's only one that's been verified actually as Phineas.
Okay, well, I will
put together what I can. And it's everywhere.
There we go. And obviously we record this before I do the video, so look forward to seeing that.
Mm.
I look forward to seeing that because I haven't seen it yet myself.
Okay.
And on and with the segue. Podcast. My segue is always a good song from.
Yay!
After last episode's fascinating yet rather macabre tales, I wanted to focus on something a bit more positive. A simple tale of a good deed with a heck of a twist. The exact date of this event is not clear. It was within the period from late 1863 to early 1865, where a young man was travelling by rail from New York to Washington so he could have a little break from his studies at Harvard University. He had gotten off the train at Jersey City during an extended stop and found the platform was particularly crowded. In an effort to be considerate and get out of the way of passengers trying to get on board, he found himself at the edge of the platform leaning against a train carriage.
Mm-mm.
Then the train moved. The young man immediately fell feet first into the sizable gap between the platform and the higher floor level of the carriage, heading straight for the track and the rolling wheels of the train.
Oh.
Thankfully, this story has a happy ending, and I will let the survivor tell the tale in his own words. Quote, "I was personally helpless when my coat collar was vigorously seized and I was quickly pulled up and out to a secure footing on the platform. Upon turning to thank my rescuer, I saw it was Edwin Booth, whose face was of course well known to me, and I expressed my gratitude to him, and in doing so, called him by name." End quote. Edwin Booth was a pretty famous Shakespearean actor at the time, and generally considered the more talented of a pair of brothers who had made quite the name for themselves. His brother, John Wilkes Booth, would become the more famous, well, infamous more like, when he assassinated Abraham Lincoln on April 14th, 1865. So where did this tale of the nicer brother of a man who shot a president fit into the pages of What the History? Edwin Booth himself was unaware of just who he saved for months after the event, until this strong supporter of Abraham Lincoln received a letter from Colonel Adam Badeau, who was a friend of the young man who he had served with in the staff of General Ulysses S. Grant, and it was thanking Edwin for his patriotic deed. That's how Edwin found out, just a few months before his brother would go down in history for shooting President Lincoln, that he had saved Robert Todd Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's son, from falling beneath that rail car at Jersey Station.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing. What a coincidence.
Mm-hmm. And this strange coincidence did not mark the end of Robert's involvement in strange historical coincidences. He was, of course, invited to attend at the performance of Our American Cousin with his father on that fateful night in April and had declined. As Lincoln's son, however, he was in much demand later in life. He turned down offers to run for president, instead working in the background, and eventually ended up in the staff for President James Garfield, and was a witness when on July 2nd, 1881, James Garfield was assassinated. As he was standing over the dying president, Robert was quoted to have said, "How many hours of sorrow I have passed in this town," end quote. In 1901, Robert was attending the Pan American Expo in New York at the personal invitation of President William McKinley, when news reached him that in another area of the expo, President McKinley had been assassinated. So it is little wonder that in later life, when asked about attending any more presidential gatherings, Robert answered, quote, "No, I'm not going, and they better not ask me, because there is a certain fatality about presidential functions when I am present," end quote. As you can see, my exploration of the strange coincidence that saw the brother of John Wilkes Booth saving the son of Abraham Lincoln went a little beyond the meeting of Robert Todd Lincoln and Edwin Booth. It just goes to show, once you start digging, the history just keeps coming.
Absolutely. That is just amazing. Imagine being Robert Todd Lincoln, though, God, you know, going to these presidential things and people getting shot, like the president's getting shot.
Yeah.
And dying, and he's just going, I'm going to stay home with a hot toddy. Loves. Thanks, but no thanks. I don't want anyone else getting hurt.
Yeah. He did attend one more function, which was a dedication of the Lincoln Memorial.
I hope that was fatality-free.
That, I believe, was fatality-free.
Good.
Otherwise, it would have shown up in my coincidence file.
God. That is amazing, that story.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mind-blowing. Oh, my God.
When I first heard it, it's like, what?
What?
What? That can't be real. Oh, my God, it's real.
Oh, God. Isn't history wonderful, everyone?
Because I've heard plenty of historical stories that pretty much stories with very little behind them.
Yeah.
But when you find something like this and you start digging and it's all over the place, you go, okay.
Yeah. Okay, absolutely.
I love what the history.
Oh, God, me too.
And we hope hope you love it too.
Yay!
And we would love to hear from you. You can get in touch with us at...
Here we go, Trev.
Thank you. I just realised I probably should have mentioned our references first.
We do have references in both of our stories because we are scholars.
Mm-hmm. And all those references are in the podcast description, however you are listening to this. Yeah, there's plenty of options, which I'll get to soon. But if you want to get in touch with us, you can find our homepage at wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you'll find all our previous episodes, along with the descriptions and all the references for all of them. And you can leave comments there. You can head to our Twitter or Facebook page, all very easy to find. Or you can send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com. We would love to hear from you.
Wow, Trev. Never cease to amaze you, mate. I actually went through our archives yesterday.
Ooh.
We have done a lot.
Well, this is...
A lot. This is episode 51.
This is episode
51,
yes.
Yay! 51!
We celebrated at 50. That's all good.
Oh, look, we can always celebrate. There's nothing wrong with always celebrating.
Every episode of What the History is a celebration.
Absolutely, because it celebrates history.
It does. So, if you have just stumbled across us and want to know where to find more What the History, of course you can go to our homepage, or you can find us on Spotify, you can find us on Stitcher, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. We're pretty much available everywhere. And again, links are in the description right down below. If you want to check out the enhanced version I mentioned earlier, they are appearing exclusively at Rufus Project TV, which is tv.rufusproject.com. So definitely check those out if you want some nice pictures with a bit of animation and dramatic zooming and all sorts of stuff.
And the only photo of Paul Phineas.
Yeah, sometimes we can put, sometimes I put more images in than other times. It depends what we're talking about. That's definitely worth checking
and
out.
And his posters that was advertising P.T. Barnum's museum featuring Phineas are quite interesting.
Oh, they're so going in the enhanced episode.
Oh, God, yeah.
Indeed.
God, yes.
So while you're at Rufus Project TV, you can also check out some of our other stuff. We have the Rufus Project podcast that I do with my friend Christian Fletcher, the Prince of Cult Cinema in Brisbane.
Yay!
Personally dubbed the Ambassador of Cult Movies by John Waters himself. You may have remembering mentioning last time around. So enhanced episodes at Rufus Project TV, or you can find the Rufus Project podcast everywhere as well. And finally, we have just a little favour to ask. We are looking at a new potential project.
Yes.
For the Rufus Project Network. Two podcasts and a video page. That's a network. It may even get bigger.
Yeah.
So what we would like, if you could please submit to us random topics. Completely random topics. The more random, the better. The more we get, the better. Now, there will be some limitations. I'm not sure as to how controversial this topic's being. It's all very a bit up in the air at the moment. But the more topics we can get, the closer we can get to launching something new. So this is the first time you're hearing about it, people.
Yeah, we've actually had some interest in this particular new project. Mm. So please keep all your ideas coming.
We want all those ideas, as many as we can get. The more we get, the more we're going to be able to do with it. So
yeah, but I just want to add that I don't want to have any subjects in there that hurt women, children, men, anyone of any gender.
Yeah, if it's okay, obviously...
I won't have that.
If it's obviously cruel...
Yeah, it's not happening.
Or nasty, or just plain, you know, racist or misogynistic or any of those horrible things, they will go straight in the bin. So please use...
And you will be named and shamed.
I am confident that our listeners are a good bunch. I have faith in the listeners of all the history.
Yeah.
Indeed, we do.
We love you.
I also had previously mentioned that I can't guarantee every time we're making it. Okay.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to put that out there. You know, this is our new project.
And it aims...
Trev's new project. I'm just coming along for the ride.
And it aims to be very, very fun. Again, this is the first time it has been mentioned on any of the podcasts on the Rufus Project Network. So,
ooh, that's pretty cool.
Exclusive for the history stuff.
Yeah, keep on coming.
So, yeah, definitely a few things in early stages. So we'll see where we go from there. We will return in a couple of weeks' time with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
what the history? Good night, everyone.
Farewell.